Right. There's so many shoulds coming out of teenage girls. She should look like this. She should act like that. And it's exhausting for them, and it makes them shut you out, close down, close off. You know, everyone talks about teenage girls. They're like, I can't believe you can connect with teenage girls. How do you do it? And it's, I listen, you know, I give a ton of space for their voice.
Hey guys, it's Maria here, and welcome to another episode of Mom to Mom, the podcast. Ooh, this one was a doozy. I loved today's conversation, and because my daughter is 10 and we are getting very close to the teenage years, I was definitely taking note because today's entire conversation is about teenage girls. And if you ever wanted to take a look inside their brains and wonder what they are thinking, this is your episode. I am going to sit down with Chelsea Gooden. For 16 years, she has been doing work with teenage girls, and she is now inviting us into their minds with curiosity and fun instead of what we often come in with, which is fear and judgment. And it's all in her new book. It's called Underestimated: The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Chelsea is also the founder of the Activist Cartel and the mentorship director at Democracy. So she is such a wealth of information when it comes to what teenage girls are thinking about. We go there today. We are talking sex. We are talking sexuality. We are talking slut shaming. We're talking the double standards that exist, hormones, and those big feelings that we all have, including the baggage that we bring as parents when we're talking to our teenage girls. So obsessed with this conversation. It was so great. I actually want to do a part two. But in the meantime, here is part one and my conversation with Chelsea Gooden. Chelsea, hi. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. That was a great intro, accenting the wisdom and the power. I love it.
They have so much power. Congratulations on the book. It is fabulous.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. It's really, the ripple effects have been huge, just hearing from women across the country. It's been so moving.
That's amazing. And to know that you're making a difference is just incredible. Exactly. All the hard work pays off. And you put a lot into this book because you spoke to so many teens, and obviously this was very, very thoughtful. So tell us how this even came to be. How did you get involved in this work in the first place?
Right. Well, I had all this one-on-one time with teenage girls, whether it was tutoring or mentoring, and they were inviting me into this rare space of trust, right? Everyone wants to know the secrets that they don't tell their parents. And I realized in that space, they were so wise and they were so much smarter than we all think they are, and that I could be their microphone and portal for what they want to say to the world, you know, their advocate for their voice. And that was where, you know, the book was developed. And they were a huge part of the process. You know, I quote them a lot in the book. They gave their thoughts on the chapter titles. They gave edits on drafts. You know, I wanted to make sure I was doing right by them.
The quotes are really cool. And it's amazing how profound that these teenagers can really be. Look at all the little tags we have here for all the all the cool things that I wanted to remember. And we will get to some of those quotes in a minute because some of them are just amazing. But why was that important to include? Why did you want to make sure that their voice was shared in this?
Well, that is one of the number one things teenage girls tell me is that they don't feel heard and they feel judged instead, right? That we're not giving enough space for them to actually just share their thoughts on things. Instead, we swoop in with our ideas on how to fix it or what they should be doing, right? There's so many shoulds coming out of teenage girls. She should look like this. She should act like that. And it's exhausting for them, and it makes them shut you out, close down, close off. You know, everyone talks about teenage girls. They're like, I can't believe you can connect with teenage girls. How do you do it? And it's, I listen, you know, I give a ton of space for their voice.
That's a big piece of the puzzle. And that is something that I've learned and I've been working on through this show. I talk to experts all the time. And that is something I've heard time and time again, is sometimes kids just really need an ear. They don't need you to fix it, but we are fixers and we're pleasers. And so are the young girls, which we'll get into in a minute. My daughter actually, and I've shared this before, was having an issue and I was chit-chatting with her. And I go into the, okay, she needs the big spiel. And I gave it to her and she was like, I don't need a TED talk. I just wanted you to listen.
My daughter. I love that she called it a TED Talk.
She was like 9 years old. I was like, yes, you did not need a TED Talk. You just needed an ear. And I think you're right. Girls just feel like they are not being heard.
And also ask them. You can say, do you want to just have me listen right now? Or do you want my thoughts on that? And I find that to be just a useful tool too. Because the girl will often be like, no, I just want you to listen. And you're like, okay, great. Thanks for the clarity.
And you know what? It also buys you a little time. I really appreciate like the beat. When you're in a deep conversation with a kid and you're like, I don't know what to say yet, you take that beat and that can buy you a little time. Do you want my thoughts on this or do you really just wanna to vent?
Exactly.
And that's important. So this book is great, obviously, for parents with teenage girls, of course. But you also wrote the book for not parents of teenage girls, right? Like coaches, teachers, grandparents, friends.
Exactly. I mean, we are all, you know, underestimating the impact that we have on these kids' lives and how much it affects them. I mean, if you think about even, you know, as an adult now, you can think of that teacher that had a huge impact on you or a coach that had a huge impact. And so, yeah, it definitely, you know, there's so many practical tools in the book on how to actually communicate so that we empower teenage girls rather than what, you know, I see a lot of is squashing them into trying to be perfect and be pleasing and make everyone around them happy and do the right thing.
Yeah. And do you think a lot of this has to do with the big, big feelings that they're having? You talk a lot about that in the book. Talk about the big feelings and what you mean by that.
Right. So that's a way that they get judged, right? Those stereotypes you said at the beginning, they're dramatic, they're emotional, they're crazy. And they're actually normal human feelings, right? Actually, humans all have big feelings, but as adults, we get a lot better at squashing them and repressing them and stuffing them down. And, you know, they come out later in life in therapy and all sorts of ways, right? And actually, I find that girls, when they're just given the space to feel that big feeling and you say, yeah, that sucks, that sounds hard, then they don't feel bad for having it. So often when we do come in with the fixing or the slapping positivity on it, they're like, oh, I am a bad person because I'm feeling angry right now or frustrated, disappointed. Again, normal human emotions. And we don't want to shame them for their big feelings. It's actually, you know, so much psychology research to support how just feeling your feeling and also naming the feeling is such a healthy processing tool. So, you know, I include in the back of the book, the feelings wheel, which has, you know, a lot of times our vocabulary is limited when we feel that feeling and we're like, I'm angry right now or sad. And we have like five words to draw from. But a feelings wheel gives you all these other words. And they found that when you actually find the right word, it helps you just lean into it, feel it, and process it out of your system rather than keeping it inside you forever.
The wheel is great because it's like a cheat sheet.
Yeah, exactly.
We could all use that. I've been using overwhelmed a lot. And even my kids now can understand when mom is overwhelmed, they get the cue like, okay, we're going to back off a little bit. I'm like, overwhelmed, overstimulated. Yeah.
That's good communication. And also I would say disappointed is a way stronger emotion than people give it credit for. And what we do is we like to power through it instead. You know, it's really hard to watch your kid in a place of pain or discomfort, right? Like, so, you know, if we power through, then they won't feel it anymore, right? But actually what happens is it stays with them and isn't processed.
Yeah. Now, we can't ignore what's happening physically. There are hormones at play. Bodies are changing. Things are happening. They're growing up so fast. But I feel like a lot of times girls and teenagers and women get discounted because, oh, they're being hormonal. Oh, it's her time of the month. So how can we balance that where we have to take this into account because things are physiologically happening, but also not discount how they're feeling or blow it off because it's hormonal.
Yeah, and I would say there's not been a lot of room created for both girls and women to just be messy and imperfect sometimes. It's a difference I see with boys when I'm working with them. Boys can make mistakes and be a little bit of a mess, and it's the whole boys will be boys, and they don't absorb it into their identity as they are now a failure or bad, whereas girls make one mistake. I mean, heck, they do poorly on a test, and they are devastated, and they integrate it into their identity so harshly. And so the more room we can kind of just create for them to have that human experience, I find to be super helpful.
There is a quote that I have tagged here in the chapter about perfectionism from Cynthia, who was 16 years old, and I just think this is so profound. She said, "Perfection is an evil in disguise that buries you in blankets of worry and interest in your improvement, but ultimately those blankets smother you." I mean, oh, Cynthia.
She's going to be so excited that you just read that quote on this. She's going to be so excited.
It's fantastic. And by the way, Cynthia, and to all the teenagers, this isn't something that goes away. A lot of us carry with us this idea of perfectionism. And I don't know that you can answer how we got here, why girls feel that way, why males tend to not feel that way. I guess all we can do is do better for our girls and try to make them feel like they don't need to be shackled into perfection.
Exactly. And it's people pleasing too, right? The next chapter right after that is people pleasing. And that's the duo, the girls to feel so much pressure to be perfect and to be likable. And that is what I see creating this level of anxiety that we're seeing, you know, in all the reports on their mental health. And I think it has a lot to do with just naturally teaching girls and women to put other people's needs before our own so that we feel okay. We're like, okay, everyone's happy, everyone's good. Like, I can feel okay then. And we're not actually asking a girl, what do you need? You know, what would make you happy and please you right now? And it develops a mechanism where she can actually check in with herself and be like, wait, what do I need? Because we're all used to the answer of, you know, like, well, I don't know. And then we just kind of give up and brush it off. But I think the act of actually asking and even holding space for the, I don't know, you know, be like, okay, well, I trust you're going to figure it out. Or like, I think about it for a while and get back to me. Let me know. I have a feeling you're going to think of some smart thoughts on this, you know, give her trust that she has the ability to check in and figure out what her needs are and that her needs are important.
Yeah. We have so much trouble asking for help and letting people know how we feel and being authentic because we're so worried about being liked.
Hey, Mom Squad, wanted to let you know about our Hubbub newsletter. It's got recipes, things to do, all of our fun celebrity interviews from the Hub Today, lifestyle headlines, and more. All you have to do is head to nbc10boston.com/newsletters, and you'll get all the fun that we're having on the Hub Today delivered directly to your inbox.
Right before the break, we were talking about all these different things that teenage girls face. And you have such an interesting mindset because you've had connection with all of these teenage girls and been able to hear their thoughts. So I'm wondering what you're hearing on your end from the girls you've chatted with about beauty and body image. Where do they stand on that?
Such a big issue. First of all, you know, everyone loves to put all the focus on social media, which of course it deserves focus and there's so many, you know, harmful effects. And I want to create a conversation about other things, another huge thing that they have told me about, which is the other women in their life, whether it is a mom or a teacher or just a sister or any woman in their life who loves to demean their own body, their own looks in front of them all the time. And we have this habit and culture of women just, you know, saying bad things about how we look or our weight. And then just a culture of continually dieting. Like, you know, girls have told me how their mom dieted for a decade straight and how that impacted them in a negative way because they thought that it was normalized. And so there's a lot more subtle ways that we can take control of how we speak in front of girls, how much we emphasize their looks and then what happens is it gets tied to their worth. They think, oh, okay, well, that's my value in the world, what I look like, since look at all this energy around me. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah. And for moms too, I didn't realize how much negative speak I had until I had a daughter who was watching me. And I have really tried to bite my tongue about myself. And it's amazing how many times I catch myself, but I have tried to be really good about not saying, like, oh, I look terrible today, or I need to put some makeup on, or I feel fat, or I feel this, or I feel that. Like, I've been really careful, and it's amazing how much negativity there is that bouncing around there.
I know. Well, good for you. I mean, the fact that you're catching that is such a huge, it's a huge win. And then also just the commentary on girls' bodies. I mean, that's a thing that shouldn't be happening. Even if you think you're complimenting a girl's body, she she doesn't feel it that way. And a girl just told me just the other day how there's so much commentary on what she eats too. Yes. And she, how they'll be like, oh, you're eating all that? And just real subtle statements that she's just like, oh, okay, I guess I should feel bad about this and insecure about this. And there's just so much messaging at all times that, you know, we could be mad at the media and social media and we can blame them, yes. And we can, look at what actually is in our control and make really intentional choices to model what's best for them,
yes.
The girl in front of us.
We could probably do a whole separate thing on just food. And because I also try to be really careful about, you know, if like, all of a sudden my daughter wasn't eating breakfast and I put way too much on it, right? Because I had struggled with eating, you know, being restrictive when I was young. And so she's only 10 and I was kind of projecting and she really just wasn't hungry, but I was already jumping ahead to like, why are you doing that? And I wanted to like dig deeper and it wasn't that big of a thing. But that's something
and
that I'm always
it.
Like tiptoeing around because I want to catch that if that is a thing.
I know. And you nailed it. It is projecting because we have our own wounds in these issues. Like, of course, there's such a generational cycle with beauty, with eating that is handed down from mother to daughter. I mean, I had my own stuff that I talk about in the book of my mom telling me to suck in my gut. And she did it. She just said it to me like once or twice and it stuck with me forever.
Yes.
And she doesn't even remember saying it, I don't think. It wasn't intended harm in any way. And I think that these patterns, you know, we often project onto the girl our own inner teenager wounds, you know, the wounds we got when we were teenagers.
Absolutely. Similar thing with me. One of my favorite family members, totally meant it in a good way, was saying when I was 16, you know, she was like, I was so thin when I was young. Like, not like Maria, she's so youthfully meaty. And then I didn't eat for like 3 years. Because of one comment, literally. And we have to be so careful how we talk to our girls because it was like, it just like, it cut me. And it was just that one comment, you know? But these things like really, really matter. Language matters, words matter, and we just have to be really careful.
Well, thank you for highlighting it on the show. I think we're doing a good thing, even bringing awareness to it now. We're trying to break these cycles,
all right? Let's talk about the big scary thing. You do an entire chapter on sexuality and sex. And this can be like horrifying for parents to think about, talk about, dive into. I want to read just the very first part that you wrote. You said, I found that the topic of teenage girl sexuality exposes the most gripping, overpowering, alarming, toxic, and understandable fears. It's a space full of so many charged opinions that I'm certainly going to step in some S-H-I-T here, but I'm up for it. So let's do it together. Talk to me about this chapter and kind of like the gist.
Right. So so many moms come at me being like, how do I talk to her? How do I talk to her about sex? You know, and I always say the first question I ask is, what makes you uncomfortable about talking about it? Because go figure that out first, because we're bringing it back to those wounds, your baggage, right? Which, by the way, I say this with so much compassion. Every woman has baggage around this issue, our own issues that we have to reckon with, because otherwise we will pass them down to the, you know, a teenage girl will feel your wounds, your insecurities, and your issues around it, and she'll absorb them if you're not super mindful of it. Because the truth is, to come into a conversation about sex with a teenage girl, you have to be in such a non-judgmental space. There needs to be no shame, no judgment, a genuine curiosity and care for whatever she says to you. And she'll feel it. She will feel your tone. And if you have a secret agenda, she will feel it and she'll shut you out. So the more you can be a safe place for her where she knows she won't be judged or shamed, the better. And it takes doing your own work to
get there. I was going to say that might take years. So a good thing I have a few. I have to heal inner wounds and make sure there's no shame and no judgment going into it. So how do we recommend doing that? Therapy or...
Yeah, I mean, I'm always a fan of therapy. I mean, I certainly have healed a lot in therapy. And, you know, honestly, reading, I feel like there's just a lack of education. I mean, our sex education in the United States is really intense. Only 18 states require that sex education be medically accurate. And another one is only 11 states require that consent be taught in our sex education curriculum, which, you know, we're not doing any favors for our boys either. Of course, there's a lot of confusion. And so, you know, a big issue I bring up in this chapter is gender double standards, sexual violence, like issues that teenage girls are mature enough to talk about. If anything, they feel respected to be a part of the conversation, where I often bring up that consent conversation with girls all the time, because I'm approaching from an intellectual standpoint. It's not me trying to be like, give me data on your sex life, you know, that mm-hmm. type of agenda. It's more like, what do you think about this? Like, what do you think? How do you think we could do better? What would you like to be taught in schools? And engaging their intellect rather than making it something about their personal life.
Hey, Mom Squad. Wanted to let you know about an initiative called Supporting Our Schools. The Boston stations of NBC and Telemundo are now supporting our schools year-round through the NBC Universal Donation Drive. It's a really cool program. From new technology to something as basic as pencils, there are schools all across our region that really lack the supplies that they need to provide our children with a quality education. So if you're interested in learning more, you can head to nbc10boston.com/supporting our schools.
Right before the break, we were talking about the big one, the big kahuna, sex and sexuality and shame and shaming. And one of the things you talk about in the book is slut shaming. And I want to hear your thoughts on that, not just for teens.
Yeah, right. It does carry into womanhood, right? This is one of the number one things teenage girls want me to tell the world is how much they feel slut shamed. And it is such an issue of where they can't do anything right. They're either, you know, wearing an outfit that makes them a slut, or they are prude and closed off and not in touch with their sexuality at all, and they can't get it right. And there's not any space for them to explore what is a healthy relationship to their identity as being pretty or sexy, or what is that for them? You know, where can we give them some room where there isn't shame and judgment? And this is where there is a huge double standard, because boys are permissioned in a big way in the media to pursue pleasure, and that they you know, it's all good for them to, you know, have a healthy relationship to sexuality. They get affirmation for it, whereas that's not what women and girls get. So again, it creates that baggage and those wounds that we carry into womanhood.
Well, a lot of it has to do with clothing too. When I think of slut shaming, I think of, oh, don't wear this or don't expose that or that, where men, boys don't really dress in that way typically, so like they don't have to face that. But where do you stand, or where do the girls, I know, like, even my daughter wants to wear certain things that I don't find appropriate for school, right? Or right. For certain occasions. And again, yes, I bring my judgment and I bring my baggage and I bring all that. So what's the right way to handle, and when? And
okay, such a good question, because again, dress codes are also something the girls just only feel shame about. They don't feel like, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, they just feel like, oh, okay, you're telling me my body's dangerous. You're telling me that it's my entire responsibility to manage a boy's inclinations, that all the blame is put on me. You know, that's what they hear with dress codes. And I'm talking about dress codes these days, it's interesting. I mean, it's like a tank top, right? It's stuff that you wouldn't normally realize the wounds of shaming that happen with dress codes. But in terms of your question about, like, you know, my not wanting your daughter to wear that, I bring it always back to the tool of phrase things like a question with genuine curiosity, seeking to understand her, where you're like, why do you want to wear that? You know, not with judgment, just like, I just want to know, like, how does it make you feel? Like, how is it, what is it that it brings up in you that you like? So that you can even understand what she's trying to express, because a teenage girl's relationship to her clothes and fashion is critical.
Major.
Because it is the biggest space for them to explore their identity. And it's an exploration. Just because she's wearing that outfit today does not mean she's going to wear it forever, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's kind of like, how does this make me feel? Like, who am I when I wear this?
Yeah.
And we could just give her a little more space without that judgment and just understand, so she feels understood about it. Also, when you open up that type of conversation, she's more likely to listen to your perspective because she feels like her voice was heard first. And if you give her agency and choice, like, sometimes you're just like, okay, well, I trust your choices to wear this. And you actually give her the trust.
Ooh.
She's going to take a lot more responsibility and be like, wait, okay, my parents trust me to make
gosh.
This choice. Like, is this
like
a responsible
that.
Choice? You know,
trust
really give
choices.
Her agency wherever you can.
I'm writing that down. That can come into play in a lot of different areas besides clothes.
Everywhere.
Oh my gosh, we are out of time. We did not have nearly enough time. You guys, if you want to get inside the brains of teenage girls, if you know one, if you have one, Underestimated, the Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Chelsea, you're brilliant. Thank you so much.
All right, that's a wrap for this episode of Mom to Mom. I loved this episode. It was one of those where I'm like, oh, we're out of time. We need more time. I would love to have Chelsea back to dive into more on this because, like I said, I'm getting dangerously close with my own daughter to the teenage years, and this book has just been so, so helpful. All right, I hope you like what you heard. If you do, I would love it if you could rate and review the podcast. That means a lot. Also, you could download the episodes and check out our library of other episodes. So many great topics to listen to. All right, that does it for me. I'll see you next time here on Mom to Mom.